Welcome back to Shattering Myths. You know, it's not only the civil rights movement that is eliciting stupidity and the reactions of members of our society and beguiling them to respond foolishly to bad information and not take responsibility for their own actions. But religion does that as well. We had an ad that played during the commercial break. Scott, let's run the claim of the ad and our response to it.
Sometimes it feels like you'll never find the one God intended for you. Find God's match for you.
That sounds kind of
dumb. So that you know, that sounds kind of dumb, comes from a South Park episode. They presented the truth about Mormonism and of Joseph Smith. And the chorus of that runs all the way through. In fact, the entire episode is really the lyrics to what we're playing. One of our favorite scenes, of course, is that Joseph Smith claims that he found these magical tablets that he couldn't show as evidence, and then he had this fellow write down everything that he recalled from these tablets, but the guy lost the transcription of what Joseph Smith told him was on the tablet. So
he went on the old Muhammad playbook.
Yeah. So then Joseph Smith was desperate to start his new religion. So he said, "Oh my God, what am I going to do?" He says, "Well, just you told me it was on the tablets before. Just tell me what's on again. We'll write it all down." And so he said, "Well, I better go back and check out the tablets again." And this time he came back with an entirely different story, and it had all changed. And so the guy was writing this down. Said, "Wait a minute. What you're telling me now is not what you told me before." And Joseph Smith said, "Hey, don't you be bothered with that. It was purposely designed to change." And so that's when they begin this dumb, running all the way through it. And it's really no different than a Christian business telling folks, you know, find God's match for you, because God's incapable of acting on his own. Well, we've already proven that. Paul wrote that the God of the Old Testament, he's impotent. He is he's just a mean-spirited dude that no longer is relevant. But I've got it under control now. I've come up with this entirely new means for you to be saved. All you got to do is believe in me, and you'll be just fine. To that, we would say the same thing.
Yeah, dumb.
Yes, and it is. That's the nature of religion. It's the reason in the first hour we talk about this. Do I care about George Zimmerman? No, I don't. Quite honestly, I don't care about Trayvon Martin. His death does not diminish America. Do I wish the kid wasn't killed? Sure, but I don't know the kid. You know, to sit there and wring our hands over his death when there are so many who die without justice, and this kid had a hand in his own death. You know, I'm going to shed a tear for when a child dies when disease ravages their body or a drunk driver drives a car into them. That is worthy of me grieving over.
Much more clear cut.
Yes.
Very clear cut.
Yeah, and so in this kind of a case, the reason we talk about it is to reveal just how prejudiced, just how misguided, how indoctrinated, how grotesquely immoral our society has become. And because what we're pushing for in society is a complete rejection of the truth, of evidence, so that instead lies can be accepted as true, what we find in society as a whole is no different than what we find in religion. The promotion of lies, the complete rejection of evidence, and an utter disassociation with reason. And what it does, I think, Scott, is help tie in this reality that there's a reason that Yahweh began his request to Abram by saying, "I want you to walk away from your country." And that country was Babylon, which Yahweh goes to great detail to describe as being caustic and corrupting from a religious and political standpoint. That's what the issue is here. It doesn't matter if the corruption is religious or political. You know, there is no Hebrew term for religion. There is no Hebrew term for politics. But God goes to great detail to describe the manifestations of these horrid human constructs and how they work together, not only to beguile people, but to dumb them down so that collectively they're no longer accountable for their own actions. They're no longer thoughtful. They're no longer able to process information in a reasonable way. They don't even care about evidence. And they go off half-cocked with stupid opinions. The Trayvon Martin, George Zimmerman case is just a grand example of what's happened to us. Why God is so opposed to religion and politics, and why he says, you're not bringing that stuff into my house. If you're going to be part of the African-American community, so many people were saying, oh, I'm praying to Jesus about this. And so much of this was riled up in the African-American churches, blending everything that is despicable about politics and religion together, dumbing people down so that they're oblivious to what God said. And even when confronted with what God said, they're incapable of processing it. Oh, no, they're entitled to their opinions. You have to respect their religion. Well, that's not God's point of view. We're going to turn now back to the second statement that he etched in stone. We've gone over it many times, but this time I'm going to try to amplify it. And so we look at each of the words and we garner as much from God's instruction as we possibly can. You're not listening to this show if you are have an affinity for religion, and you are listening to this show if you have an affinity to learn what Yahweh has taught us. He said, you should not ever do anything which associates yourself with. This is Lo Asha La. You should never attend to, act upon, engage on behalf of, or profit from. You should never conceive or fashion on your own behalf. Now, this was Lo Asha La. Asha is the Hebrew word for acting upon, engaging in. I mean, there are things that we want to act upon and engage in, like the covenant relationship. When Yahweh provides his guidance, we want to act on that guidance that he has provided. This was negated by the Hebrew form of negation, which is lo. So it's rather than we should act, as he tells us, following his instructions, particularly relative to his covenant and his means to redemption, which are the seven steps that he has provided through the invitations. He's saying lo asha. So this is something we ought not do. And then it was followed by the preposition la. La means you don't want to move towards this. So you should never act in a way that moves you towards an affinity for any of the things which follow. It was written in the call and perfect. And thank God it was written in the imperfect. Because by having it written in the imperfect, fellows like me and my friend Larry there in Florida, I have an opportunity to change our behavior, to change our attitude, to change our direction and our thinking so that we are no longer guilty of acting against this instruction. Now, by the way, I'm going to speak just a moment here about what the imperfect says, but also, should we continue to be adverse to Yahweh's instructions, that does not mean that we are condemned by the instruction. We can be guilty of violating anything in the Torah so long as we avail ourselves of the Torah's provision for rendering us innocent, which is matzah. So long as we avail ourselves of matzah, we can be guilty of violating some of the Torah's instructions, some of God's guidance. While it's not conducive to our relationship, it is not a salvation issue. That's what most people miss as it relates to this. But what does the imperfect conjugation tell us? That it's ongoing habitual behavior. So, for somebody who would say, I am a patriot, they're speaking of habitual, ongoing behavior. For someone says, I am a Republican, I am a Democrat, I am a Tea Partier, then you're talking about ongoing habitual behavior. If someone identifies himself, I am a person of faith, I am a Christian, then you're talking about ongoing behavior. And so, while Larry and I were both Christians, we were both very active in politics, we once would have been in violation of this instruction, but the very fact that we stopped means that we're no longer in violation of it. That's the way that it reads here using the imperfect. Welcome to the program, Larry.
Thanks. I appreciate it, Yada. And, yeah, I walked out of Babylon some years ago. I decided not to take part in the myths that are laid down to us, whether it's through, you know, political means or religious means. We should walk right away from them. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And so Yada was saying, you know, I want you, because the first statement, he says, he introduces himself by name. And so if you're praying to a God by a name other than Yahweh, then you're not talking with the real God. And then he says, I'm your Savior. I'm the one that saved you. I engaged myself to save you. And then he says, you're not going to exist with another God in my presence. And then,
yeah, that's a statement of fact. That's not a commandment.
No.
In other words, if you're not with Yahweh, your flesh is going to not exist.
That's
what I'm saying. Of course, they call that a commandment.
Yeah, I don't know.
As opposed to just a bold, I mean, it's just a flat statement. And that's where people get screwed up, you know, because they get all these religious copy edits and add that to the tradition that we've been spoon-fed. Pretty soon, you have no idea what Yahweh's really saying at all.
You're right. There is no statement in that of the three ideas that are communicated in the first of the three statements that Yah etched on the first of the two tablets. There isn't. You could not construe a command out of any of them. And one is says, "I am Yahweh, your God." Statement of fact. Number two is, I saved you. I'm the one who engaged, descended, diminished myself to lead you away from the crucible of human and political religious oppression out of the house of bondage. I saved you. Statement of fact. I'm the only one that can save you. And statement of fact, you're not going to continue to exist with any other gods in my presence. Three statements of fact. Not a command among them. We'll return to Shattering Myths with Larry and Yada in a moment. Hello and welcome back to Shattering Myths. I'm sorry, during the commercial break, a longtime friend who's been listening to this show wrote me, said, you know, I've never heard of drank or lean before. We talked about it on the Shattering Myths show, wondered why it wasn't reported in the media. I had intended to go on to other topics in the future, so that we've probably beaten this one to death. But it is interesting that this combination of a drink like Arizona iced tea with caffeine, it was usually done with Sprite and Skittles, along with Robitussin's cough syrup, collectively create an especially intoxicating brew. And it is a very, very serious, intoxicating brew. And, you know, I think that there is, Larry, I think there is a direct correlation between being willing to intoxicate ourselves with things like whether it be, you know, your drug of choice. For some people it's alcohol, some people it's marijuana, some people it's cocaine, and other people it's heroin, other people it's more accessible concoctions like this blend called Drank. And the intoxications of politics and religion. You know, when Yahweh was speaking of Shaul and Habakkuk, embrace this, Habakkuk 2, he specifically talks about the intoxicating nature of his writings. And God uses the concept of intoxication throughout his teaching to tell us that, you know, we can be intoxicated by words, by rhetoric, by stupid proclamations like are being fed to the African American community, like this boy was consuming just as much as you can consume something that inebriates you, makes it more difficult for you to think properly, for you to be judgmental. What do these intoxications do? They diminish our ability to be judgmental. What does religion do? It diminishes our ability to be judgmental. What does politics do? Politically, particularly political correctness, it diminishes our ability to think rationally and be judgmental. And when you're rendered irrational, then you can present evidence until the cows come home. You can share everything Yahweh had to say, and if someone has been intoxicated by religion, what's the response to it?
Usually they don't pay any attention to Yahweh's words, and they run right back and they parrot traditional phrases they've been taught. That's what I found, anyway.
Right. They're intoxicated by their own religion.
Sure.
Unwilling to consider evidence, unwilling to be reasonable. And so that's why God says you should never do anything which associates yourself with any of this idolatry, these religious icons, these objects of worship, or any visual representation of something, a likeness, a picture, a drawing, a painting, which depicts or resembles anything. Now, he's going to talk about this now in association with a religious context, of speaking for them, of which would be like a pledge of allegiance, making a statement of faith, you know, the four spiritual laws, or the Billy Graham the big rallies where, you know, repeat after me, I am a sinner, and, you know, and goes on through. Don't do that, is what he says. Or any visual representation of something which is in the heavens above, or which is on earth or below, or which is in the waters beneath the land.
Or you could even, you want to talk about the hypocrisy of Islam as an example. You could be in Iran, or you could be in North Korea, where they're, you know, secular humanists. And
yes.
You've got the picture of the Ayatollah, or you got the picture of Kim Jong-il and his son,
right.
And so what Yahweh's telling us is that, you know, you don't do a Pledge of Allegiance. You know, and
right.
when I see people
right.
running around with the flag and with the Statue
right.
of Liberty
right.
behind, with her crown, with the sun drops, you know, coming
right.
off of it.
Right. Athena.
You know,
the Statue of Liberty is Athena. It's a sun
sure.
goddess. It's a pagan goddess, for crying out loud.
Yeah. Yeah, and yet, you know, we see many people that are basically well-intentioned. I understand they're well-intentioned people. They're people that I agree with on 95% of the time. Really.
Yeah.
But they bought into
the patriotism.
Yeah, they've trashed themselves. They've done exactly what Yahweh told them not to do. And that's
right.
why we're in the position we're in today, which is what you've been going on about. I mean, when you can no longer discern right from wrong, you know,
yeah.
this is what we have left.
Yep. When we return to Shattering Myths, we're going to talk about why God used Ashah in this particular statement, as opposed to any of the Hebrew words for conceiving, creating, building, carving, or engraving an idol. Yeah, you've been dumbed down if you believe that God's the second commandment, A is a commandment, and that it says, don't make an idol. We'll return to Shattering Myths in a moment. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. We're here with Larry Iamiata. We're considering Yahweh's testimony. I was kidding with Scott at the end of our commercial break there that I was reading more about the correlation between the intoxicating brew that Trayvon Martin was consuming that evening and other drugs. And one of the things I admitted is, you know, there's a lot of things that I don't know much about. And the drug culture happens to be one of them. I have no clue. I don't know the composition or the effect of or the cost of or the means of consuming a roofie from methamphetamines, from various forms of crack heroin to, or crack cocaine to snorting it the original way, and how these drugs are to be consumed, what their effect is, why people take them. I mean, I got to tell you, I am clueless in this regard. I have chosen. My choice is. I mean, a long time ago when I was growing up, I decided that I had a fairly compulsive personality. Once I grab onto something, I want to wrestle it on down. That's why I think I was reasonably successful in business. Is that I'm committed. If I'm going to start a business, I'm going to put my all into it and to see if I can make sense of it. When I started writing Prophet of Doom, I was absolutely determined to find a way to put the Quran in chronological order and to set it into the context of Muhammad's life, because I knew that was the only way that we were going to be able to make sense of any of this. I have a compulsive personality. I want to get to the bottom of it. Once I was writing Tea with Terrorists, and I was trying to figure out why the Quran said it confirmed the Torah when it seemed to contradict it, and I found that, wait a minute, my English Bibles are really screwed up. They aren't even remotely accurate. The compulsive nature of my personality says, I got to figure this out. I just can't walk away from this. I need to wrestle it on down. I feel kind of like Israel, which means to wrestle with God. I need to wrestle it on down and find a place that is ultimately firm and reliable in this regard. So when it came, this is a long story short, but when it came to drugs, of course, when I went to college, drugs were really pervasive in the early 70s. And they were used all around me. And my response was, I'm going to pass. And the reason I'm going to pass is that as compulsive as I think my personality is, I'm concerned that if I were to try it, that I would have a very difficult time breaking the habit. And so it's just easier not to try it than it is to try to break a habit later. And so
many of us are thankful for your compulsive personality. The truth is, had you started doing the drugs, you probably would have become the Carlos Later of the business.
Yes.
Anybody that knows you knows what I'm saying is true. Yeah. So, it's a good move. I'm glad you didn't do that, by the way.
The thing that I've become compulsive about now is trying to understand the Hebrew words that Yahweh used to reveal himself to us. So, speaking of that compulsiveness, one of the things that I recognize in this last statement is that the truncated version of what's called the Second Commandment, but there is no command. This was not written in the imperative. It was written in the imperfect, which is says you should not make a habit of doing this. And God didn't say you should not carve a graven image, which is the truncated version, right, on the church walls and on the right. Courthouses. Yeah, he didn't use the Hebrew word for carve, which is kala, or chaka, or chatuba, or milakath, or karusith. To engrave, by the way, would have been patuach. To create an idol would be bara. To build an idol would be bana. Well, he didn't use any of those verbs. So why does the English translation said that you should not build or carve or engrave an idol when God didn't use a verb that would suggest any of those things? He used asha. Asha is a very common Hebrew word. Don't act upon. Yeah, don't act upon. Don't engage with. He's talking about religious behavior here. He's not talking about the guy down the street that has a little shop that's casting cute little idols. And so the person said, well, at least I'm not in violation of that one because, son of a gun, I've made an idol in a while. Even when I go out on camping trips, I don't whittle idols. And they say, well, don't worry about that one. But that's not what he's saying. He used asha. Asha means don't act upon, don't engage with, don't approach these things. Don't do anything which associates yourself with a pesel, an object of worship. But what is really the difference in patriotism and showing reverence for the Statue of Liberty, which is the goddess Athena, or the flag of the United States and putting your hand over your heart or pledging allegiance to it? What really is the difference between that and showing a reverence for the Christian cross?
Well, he's telling you not to do either because there's no difference in what he's laid down there. So, exactly. when people think that, you know, you hear the old tired, worn out phrase, God bless America, you know, these guys pontificate a bunch of lies, and at the end of it, they say God bless America as they walk off the stage. And people actually buy it. And of course, Yahweh's not going to bless any land that's in opposition to what he wrote down into his Torah that's full of religious objects, that's full of, pictures of a Statue of Liberty, that's got flags with stars all over them, and people are pledging allegiance to that flag. This is a direct opposition to what he's telling us here.
Even Larry, if America was not so corrupt with its religion and its patriotism, God wouldn't bless America anyway. There's only one land that God blesses, and his criterion for blessing that land happens to be exactly the same as his criterion is for blessing us individually, which is participation in his covenant. So Israel is the only land that he speaks of blessing, and even then, it is based upon the acceptance and non-rejection of the covenant, which Christians in America have all rejected, and as such, they're doubly estranged from this idea of God blessing America. If Scott, if you can lock Larry in, I'd like to bring on Steve, who is calling in from Washington. Hello, Steve. Welcome to the program.
Hey, Yoda. This is a great conversation. Everything you said tonight is I'm fitting right in, especially with the God bless America thing. I used to be a flag waver and all that until I started listening to what you said, and then I realized, God bless America. What for? Why would God want to bless this place?
Yeah, you know, think about that for a moment. America considers itself the land of the free, and yet we incarcerate more of our citizens than any country on earth, and it's not even close. We are by far the country that incarcerates the most people. We also have the largest military, and in our military there is no freedom. We talk about ourselves as being peace-loving, and yet our military is larger than the rest of the world's militaries combined.
And we settled this land that we call our land. We stole it from the natives, and
we
settled it on
and we murdered them.
Slaves. Yes.
Right. We murdered them, and those we didn't murder, we kidnapped them and imprisoned them, and it says you can live right there, but you can't live anyplace else.
And they're still living that way to this day.
If you understand our history and you understand the present actions of our politicians, for example, invading Iraq and Afghanistan, which led to the death of a million people and the squandering of $6 trillion to make two very bad situations worse, it is impossible to be informed and rational and to be moral and to salute the flag, to do a pledge of allegiance, to sing the national anthem, or to even suggest God bless America. You know, I used to go to baseball games. The Dodgers were my favorite team, and I loved to. Sports is kind of my withdrawal from the aches and pains of the world, and we all kind of need some downtime. And sports has always been my downtime. I don't go to the Dodger games anymore because I am disgusted in the seventh inning when they decide to play God bless America, and everybody stands. And I mean, the only thing I can do is to walk away from my seats and just leave the place. I'm just disgusted by it. I don't want to be put in a position. Yeah, I don't want to be put in a position where if you don't stand at attention and take your hat off and put your hand over your heart and look at the flag during the playing of the national anthem that you've got people around you that are antagonistic. It's the hypocrisy of, you live in a land that gives you the right to choose, but if you don't choose the same way we do, then we're going to harass you.
That's the horror of this Christianity, is that they believe that God blesses America and he settled America because he wants to save the world through America, and it's just so
utter rubbish. You know, the idea that America was founded by Christians is even rubbish. I mean, that's it's just not true. The guys that actually framed and wrote the Constitution were Freemasons. And as Freemasons, they were the antithesis of what we would consider today to be a Christian, although there are now a lot of similarities between the religion. But beyond all of that, God despises Christianity. I had a woman that wrote me a letter the other day. She listens to the program, so she may she hadn't responded to my response. So let me just share it with you, the gist of it. She wrote and said, you know, I'm reading these materials, listening to your show, and this is the thing that I don't understand. You say that, you know, that if we don't choose to get to know Yahweh and to engage in his covenant according to the terms that he has laid out, then our souls cease to exist. But that would mean that the parents that take their children to church and attempt to do good would receive the same consequence as someone who's a deliberate liar and someone who's a deliberate thief and murderer. You know, why isn't the souls of those who were, you know, assaulted by the murderers and the liars and the thieves, doesn't it cry out for vengeance? And my response to the woman was, you know, from God's perspective, he sees the family that takes their children to church as far more, as killing them, as taking them into the den of the liars, as they're stealing their very souls. And so God's view of the Christian parents that are taking their children to church is far harsher than his view of someone who is lying and killing about things that aren't as dear to him. Welcome back to The Shatteringness. I'm your host, Yada. We have Steve and Larry both joining us here. It is interesting to note, then, that what God said is Asah, that I don't want you to act upon, I don't want you to engage in on behalf of any object of worship or devotion. So when we observe the 4th of July behind the pagan goddess Athena for the Statue of Liberty, are we listen to patriotic music and red, white, and blue and stars and stripes on America's birthday on the 4th of July, or we go to a baseball game and sing God Bless America or the national anthem, we'd be guilty of this, wouldn't we?
Oh, yeah.
It would.
Yeah. And by the way, I mean, if you think that you were in bad shape at a Dodgers game, I want you to think about a guy that was so loyal, he was a Cubs fan for 30 years.
You know, one time I one time I went to a NASCAR race. A friend of mine gave me tickets while I was in Virginia, and a friend of mine gave me tickets. And man, I want to say I went to a NASCAR race. I don't think I've ever been appalled more with the dumbing down of America and with this mix of Christianity, a God that is actually involved in the NASCAR race, that determines whether the race is going to be a good one or not, determines whether or not someone is injured or kept safe in the NASCAR race, and a bunch of screaming drunk, unbelievably religious and patriotic fans. As I went around there, and I would try to engage people in conversation because that's just my nature. I want to say, what in the world are you guys thinking about? And as I would try to engage people, I mean, I must have had 20 different people threaten to beat the living stuffing out of me.
Yeah, I can't imagine. I was going to say, it's a wonder you got out of there with your shirt on. You know,
I heard you tell that story before. It was pretty horrific.
Oh, it's just...
You weren't rah-rah Jesus, huh?
No, I was not rah-rah Jesus or rah-rah America, greatest country on earth, love it or leave it. And man, you know, I was at the time we were still engaged in Iraq as well as Afghanistan. We're talking, what are we accomplishing? You know, why are you supporting? Because they do. I mean, they really support the troops there. Why are you supporting what we're doing there? You know, because they'd have their flag and somebody would be wearing military garb. So why are we doing that? What good is being accomplished there?
It's so horrible, too, because you know what? It's not like the old days when they didn't come home. These days, they're coming home butchered.
Yeah, but they're coming butchered more than just, you know, because there's 10 times more Americans than the 10,000 that died in Afghanistan and in Iraq, making a bad situation where 10 times that number came back with bodies that were butchered, without arms and legs, severe burns, that sort of thing. But beyond that, Great Britain was just announced last week that there are more vets that went to Afghanistan and Iraq that have killed themselves than were killed in battle.
Oh, this is psychological. Yeah,
you're right.
Look,
right.
You can't sit there and wear your buddy's brains on your shirt, okay?
Right.
And act like, you know, you were just at a job site where a 2x4 got dropped out of the back of a truck. I mean, but that's what you're supposed to do.
But that's very different in, you know, in World War II, where there was an enemy wearing a uniform and you could buy into this, you know, we're freeing the world, although we gave it to Stalin in the East, we gave it to Mao in the West. But beyond that, you could still wrap yourself in the patriotism, you know, we're liberating a continent. But in the Afghanistan and Iraqi wars, the reason that suicides are so high, and I think the number is 20 a day in America of vets from it's really high. And the reason it's so high is that they knew that they weren't doing any good, that everybody was dying for nothing. They knew that there was nothing to be gained. They weren't doing any good. And you know, why go to a place where people are killing one another and you're witnessing just countless carnage, where you know that the people that you are there to liberate hate your guts.
Yeah, it's hard to be proud about doing nothing.
That's exactly right. And you butchered them, and you butchered those people, and you know they're not committing suicide because they saw their friends die. They commit suicide because they butchered people, and it bothers them.
There was a Marine sergeant that I heard his commander went out and said, you know, I expect everybody to get a kill today, everybody to get a kill. And he finally shot a guy riding a bike down the street. I mean,
yeah. It is.
He's broken up, but he's murdered people. That's what he says.
Yeah. Absolutely. Well, that's the end of our program today. Steve, thank you for calling in. Larry, always appreciate your contribution. We'll move on to a different topic, hopefully, other than Trayvon Martin tomorrow. There's so much to talk about in the world, particularly as we turn our attention to Egypt. May God bless you all. Look forward to being with you tomorrow.